Colonel Crawshay, Reel 2, what did you think of the course at Milton Hall?
I thought it was excellent, except that no real attempt was made to learn sufficient French to even to deal with the Gestapo. I would have thought that three quarters of the American element and half the British element didn't have sufficient French to get by any invigilation. But that was obviously a decision that had been taken, and there we were. And in the event the American element managed to work very well with the French in their teams and kept hidden and dealt with the WT transmissions to Britain rather than expose themselves to actual enemy attack, actual enemy identification. I'm not trying to say here that they lacked anything in courage or initiative. I was just saying that this was the sensible arrangement, not to expose somebody who couldn't speak French at all to a difficult situation.
Do you remember any of the people that you met at Milton Hall?
Well, the outstanding Frenchman to my memory is a man called, his nom de guerre was Jacques Robert, R-O-B-E-R-T, Robert. I believe his real name is Jacques Revez, R-E-V-E-Z. He had previously done a number of sorties into occupied France and was a source of inspiration to us all.
How did he inspire you?
He was an advisor to us all at Milton Hall, and then dropped himself and had yet another successful mission somewhere in occupied France. I don't know where. Otherwise, we worked pretty much individually as teams for reasons of security and seldom met up with our colleagues on the front, on the area.
Was your own team formed at Milton Hall?
My own team was formed at Milton Hall, and we were very excited that being the first team to be dropped.
Who was in your team?
There was a chap called Elgouache, H-E-L-G-O-U-A-C-H, which is Breton, and an Alsatian radio operator, and myself.
Were you the leader of the team?
No. Elgouache for the and initial stages, because he had some French connections where we were going.
Did your team have a name?
The name was Hugh, Mission Hugh.
Spelled?
H-U-G-H. And my nom de guerre was Crown.
What was your cover?
Well, we landed in uniform and carried on in uniform for a long time until it became quite impossible to cover the area in uniform.
Can you tell me more about the Alsatian wireless operator?
Yes, I've got some notes on him.
Can you remember anything about him?
The Alsatian radio operator. He's a very nice Alsatian peasant with certainly enough ability to be a very competent radio operator.
Did you feel that you got sufficient instruction about what to expect in France with regard to procedures and the way of life under the German occupation?
I think so, yes. But basically, the general attitude taken by all teams was to avoid unnecessary contacts.
Did you come into contact with Colonel Buckmaster or Vera Atkins?
No, I knew of Buckmaster, but he wasn't in touch with me. My London people were somebody called I've got it in that book.
Doesn't matter if you've forgotten.
Yeah.
He was the one who took you under his wing, was he? He was the one who was responsible for you.
Yes, I should have said so. Carlton Smith.
How often did you see him?
Oh, not at all until I came back to London.
Where did you go to after Milton Hall?
That was when I was dropped. There was a team taken in front of us from Milton Hall, who we thought were, but that was a deliberate cloak for security reasons, and they weren't dropped. And I was the second team to be selected, and we were dropped.
Can you take me through the procedure for going over to France, as you remember it, please?
Well, it was complicated in my case because we had the responsibility to put the 2nd Battalion SAS into contact with the Mekki. This was the 2nd Battalion SAS commanded by Paddy Mann, who'd only had a role assigned to them for D-Day at very short notice. It was our initial task to take these two SS officers and introduce them to the proper French contact, which we did. If I could dilate on them for a minute, they decided that they would have dropped to them a high degree of armament, including machine guns and mortars. And moved about the countryside in an exposed manner. Eventually, I was told the Germans were so disturbed by these noises of a pre-French, of not a pre-French, of a, so alarmed by these noises of a considerable Anglo-French force, that they detached an armored brigade from the main fighting area, which was up in Normandy. They had no difficulty at all in wiping up the small SAS force. And it is on record that Hitler's instructions were followed and there were no prisoners taken.
How was this SAS force associated with Mission Hugh?
It was added on at the last moment. It had nothing to do with our with our instructions, all we had to do was hand them over to a Frenchman and get the hell out of it.
So they were dropped with you?
They were dropped with me.
Where? What kind of plane did you go over in?
Halifax, would it have been? Probably Halifax.
Do you remember where you set off from?
Yes, it's the place where everybody sets out from. And somewhere in the Midlands.
What was the flight like?
A little disturbing, because we had quite a bit of flak as we crossed the channel. But otherwise all right, and the dropping conditions were perfect. And we dropped blind because there was every reason to suspect that the Gestapo had broken into our network. And we thought it'd be wrong to detail any particular lot to go to a map reference, etc.
Whereabouts were you dropped?
Near Leblanc in the Indre, I-N-D-R-E.
Which part of France is that?
That's almost mid-France. It's 100 kilometers below Tours. That's the best way of describing it.
So Indre is the name of the department?
Indre was the department, yes. But my team expanded to cover quite a lot more than that, including the Indre Cher and the Cher.
How did the parachute drop go?
Perfectly, no complaints, no problems. We were able to bury the chutes.
How long before D-Day was it?
2 days.
So it would have been the 4th of June?
That's right, 4th, 5th of June. They postponed D-Day a day. I think that's why it went back a day.
What's happened to you on landing? Did you find your comrades easily?
Yes, no problem at all. And we had been told to find a junction of paths in the far forest and to take cover watching the junction, which we did. And somebody was supposed to come to the junction, light a cigarette, upon which one of us was to emerge from the undergrowth and give the password, which was, "Bonjour, monsieur, y a-t-il une maison dans le bois?" Bloody stupid. And needless to say, the chap never turned up. So we then put a watch on a big farmhouse nearby and counted all the inhabitants, and when we reckoned they'd packed in for dinner, supper for the night, we burst open the two doors. I went in one and the other two went in another, and told these terrified Frenchmen not to be worried. We were Allied troops, and they were worried like anything, but they did give us the contact which put us on to the Mackey chief.
Who was he?
The Mackey chief was the one I was dealing with, a man called Siokouf, who was in charge of the moderate resistance group as against the communists.
What kind of a man was he?
I would have thought somebody who would probably not seek glamour by going ahead with politics, probably retired to his professional life, whichever it was. I can't even remember whether he was a lawyer or a doctor. No, he wasn't a doctor. He was just a leader who was there on the spot. And the other organization, the FTP, the Frontières et Partisans, was entirely communist, very strict discipline, think nothing of shooting their own people out of hand if they disobeyed. And they were very effective. Then there was another organization called LORA, Organisation pour la Réhabilitation de l'Armée, which was mainly directed by retired senior officers from the French Metropolitan Army, which had been put into French regular army had been entirely cancelled out by the Germans, and some of these retired officers were well-to-do gentlemen who had managed to conceal some of their arms and equipment in their estates. So you could call them the kind of right-wing resistance, and the FDP were the left-wing resistance. The reasonable people in the middle, the Sjokov and the schoolmasters, all that element. It was, I had the greatest trouble in getting the communists, the FDP, to take orders from the French general, because of the class distinction. And the French general was horrified at the idea that he should be anything to do with the communists at all. And in the end, we had a long conference in a shooting chalet near Poitiers all night. And all sorts of other little elements were brought in, like the ancient order of buffaloes would have in Britain, that kind of thing. But eventually it was agreed that while on no account would the communists accept orders from the French general, they would accept orders from the French general and they would pass through me, which is a difficult compromise which we worked on fairly effectively.
How strong was the resistance in the Indre Department?
It was effectively, at the end, up to 12,000, of which I would say 3,000 were reasonably trained.
And what were your instructions from SOE as far as the rising was concerned?
The instructions from SOE was to equip and train as many people in the Mackey as we could, which meant, of course, more droppings. And we spent a great deal of time. I mean, every night we were at one point or another receiving droppings from planes. Then we had in elementary instructions in blowing up. We had plastic and 808 explosives to blow up bridges and generally make a bloody nuisance of themselves, which they did most effectively.
Were there many Germans in the Indre area?
The Germans in the Indre area were almost entirely Gestapo and SS, but the SS were frequently not German at all. They were dissident prisoners of war who'd gone over to Germany on promises of better food or promises of having their religious feelings respected.
Did they interfere with you much?
No, they were particularly inefficient. We did have a few minor skirmishes which we were involved. I didn't lose any men, but A lot of people, quite distinguished people, were killed, including one I well remember, Murat, Prince Murat, a direct descendant of Napoleon.
He was killed?
He was killed.
How did it happen?
Oh, in an engagement with German troops trying to get out of the country. In an ambush. We ambushed them very successfully. To start with, when the Germans were evacuating, they were more frightened of the RAF bombing than they were of the Mackie. But as the little Mackie potties managed to capture and kill elements of Germans, they decided that they'd have no recourse but to go back to large armored columns with machine guns at both ends. And that was just what we wanted, because I was able straight away to get on to emergency network and say, at such and such a time, at such and such map reference, a German column is moving south towards whatever it was. And the Germans, being totally methodical, they said they were going to cover 12 miles to the hour. They bloody well did. So people at home were able to mark exactly where the German column would be at any given time. And this was an invaluable work done by bow fighters, the bow fighter squadrons.
What was your biggest problem in working with the resistance, do you think?
Oh, general disobedience, over-enthusiasm, which people would just go and blow up trees just for the fun of blowing up trees.
How did the French resistance view having an Englishman with them?
No problem at all. First of all, I spoke fluent French, and secondly, they realized we were the boys carrying the goodies, which included first request before anything else was always cigarettes. Second one was boots.
These were the things which they felt most lacking.
Yes.
Were there many collaborators in the area?
Yes, quite a few. And more by luck than judgment, I wasn't caught by them. They had things called White Mackie, who were bands of collaborators.
White Mackie?
Yes, merely for a name to give them.
How were you nearly caught?
Well, that incident I told you about in getting the chain of command right, we stopped about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I went to a very well-earned rest in the chateau cellars. And I was woken up by an orderly, my sentry, who said, "The Fleur here, they've surrounded the chateau. So one reacts very fast, well trained, and I took my radio operator down to the cellar and covered him with coals, and then I opened the door of the cellar next door, which was the wine cellar, and I left the door of the coal cellar ajar and turned off the light. And the Germans rushed in. They must have been a very second-class lot, because you could hear the officers, who were obviously reserve schoolmasters, I should think, saying, come out, hurry up. Don't waste my time. In fact, what had happened was the Germans were about to come into the coal cellar, which they hesitated about because there was men stepping into the dark, until German number two said, look what's here. It was the wine cellar. And they all went down to the wine cellar, and one heard his frustrated little officer saying, raus, raus, raus. And eventually he managed to get them out. But I can tell you, I've never needed a drink more than that.
What would have happened to you, do you think, if you had fallen into German hands?
Well, I'm not optimistic. I think I certainly would have been shot, but whether one had been handed over to the Gestapo beforehand is quite likely. Because you see, the worst of the torturers was in Lyon. Le Moulin was killed by the brutes. And I wasn't all that distance from Lyon headquarters.
How long were you with the Maquis in Indre?
I should say about 4 months. And when I came up and I went to Paris to give myself a break. And then I am very proud of this. Instead of mucking around with SOE and writing it up, I wired to my regiment in 53rd Division in the Reichswald and said, will anyone take Crochet? And I went straight away to ordinary surgery, which I was pleased to do.
What happened to you in Paris?
Nothing particularly shaky. We had a good time in Paris.
What was the atmosphere there when you got there?
Oh, well, we did. Obviously, the right thing to do was let the Americans in first and be the host ally. That saved a lot of all the collaborators ran and hid. And my cousin was ADC to the British officer commanding Paris, a man called Carthew Yorston, in the Black Watch. And he was a very ebullient, pleasant character, the brigadier. And my cousin and I spent a great deal of time rushing ahead outside Paris to various estates and stopping the brigadier from accepting the hospitality proffered to him by